When we started this episode, we fully expected this to be just a normal hour-long episode, but our conversation ended up being so good and so full that it turned into a two-hour conversation. So this episode is the first half of that conversation with me and Anna, and then in our next episode, we will play the second half of that conversation. But here is our episode on the ideal team player. Welcome to the It's Going to Be Good podcast, sponsored by Accru. This is the place where Anna and I talk about how we are growing as individuals and how we're building a firm in a way that's healthy and sustainable. There's always more to learn, and we want to share what we've learned and what we're still learning. Today, we will be talking about what it looks like to be an ideal team player. This is based off of a tool built by Patrick Lencioni and the Table Group. It's one of those tools that we came across pretty early in our working relationship and has been really informative and helpful in us kind of building out like what we really care about when we're looking for new employees or what we're looking for when we're looking to develop employees in specific directions. So in the past few episodes, we have been talking about creating a culture of continuous development and finding ways to share what we know and what we've learned, but none of that really works unless you have the right kind of team members who contribute to that culture and who live it out on a regular basis. And so it really only works when kind of everyone is rowing in the same direction. And so being able to identify what that direction actually is really, really helpful. So I think just starting off with, and I don't know if you have any initial thoughts about this idea that you want to share, but like, Where did this kind of stem from, and what do you feel like it's given us as a tool?
Well, I think we might have originally been introduced to this by a business consultant that we were working with who identified that we both had particular tendencies that were not always the ideal team player, more Leslie Knope style steamrolling. And everyone just get on board with my thing. It's great. It's going to be great. It reminds me of Leslie Knope telling Anne that she loves, you know, Anne telling Leslie Knope that she made her watch all the Harry Potter movies and she doesn't even like Harry Potter. And Les is like, what do you mean you don't like Harry Potter? You've watched all the movies. We have some of that energy at times. And so this was a helpful tool to give that feedback in a much more neutral way. But I was revisiting the TED Talk where Pat Lencioni talks about this. And one of the things he really talked about was that so much of our focus is on being an individual contributor, is on being, you know, the best and developing your skill set and all of these other things. But inevitably, we all work on teams. We work internally with team members. We want to position ourselves as being on the same team with our clients. You know, we may volunteer or have friend groups or have other things that we're doing where we have to work with other people. And so figuring out how, you know, we ourselves can be better members of teams. And I think some of that highlighting of where we aren't always the best members of teams was helpful to know what we can work on. And I feel like we've both pretty actively worked on that tendency to just bulldoze over other people because we might arrive at the answer faster or we might kind of know where we're going. So we just want to shortcut it. And it's like, well, does it matter that I get there fast or does it matter that we all get there together? So that's great been question. One. We've really worked on, and it's also helped us identify the team members that we needed to give some coaching to, the team members that may not have actually been the right fit because they weren't one of the three core parts of being an ideal team player, or also to identify whether a potential employee was going to be an ideal team player. And actually it's helped me as well in the sales process. Like, it, the flags that I pay attention to, I both look at our values and I also kind of think about this when I'm talking to potential clients. Like, are we going to be on the same page? Are we going to be on the same team? So I think to start, it'd be really helpful to talk about what an ideal team player actually is.
Yeah, it is a combination of three things. It is humble, hungry, and smart. And in this self-evaluation that Patrick Lencioni and the Table Group have on their website, there are questions within each category that kind of help you identify how strong you are in each kind of category. And so for humble, it's things like I compliment and praise without hesitation. I easily admit my mistakes. I readily acknowledge my weaknesses. I offer and accept apologies graciously, like that kind of stuff that's like traditionally considered humble that I think is really helpful to kind of put into words. And the idea is like we all think well of ourselves typically, like that's how we tend to think of ourselves. Like I'm great and other people maybe have some growth areas, but like I don't.
Doing great.
But we all do, because otherwise then those people are thinking the exact same thing, which is you got some growth areas. I wish I could just point those out to you.
Well, or the opposite, where like I'm the worst. I suck at everything, you know, yeah. And sometimes that's just depends on, I don't know, the time of the day. Or whether it's busy season or not, or whether you've, you know, recently made a mistake or not, you know, we can kind of swing back and forth between like, I'm great and I'm the worst. And, totally. And humility is really neither of those things.
No,
you know, it's not being prideful or arrogant, but it's also not being, you know, self-deprecating and beating yourself up. And I think that one gets mistaken for humility a lot more than, you know, I think we all kind of know it's not being prideful, but I think when we, you know, are like demeaning to ourselves or, you know, we tell self-deprecating jokes, we kind of conflate that with humility. And I love the quote from C.S. Lewis that humility is not thinking less of yourself, but thinking of yourself less.
Yes.
And so a lot of those questions are really designed to how do you interact with other people and do you make it about you or are you actually, you know, showing up for those other people? Do you compliment them? Are you cool when they apologize? Like all of those kinds of things are not really about you. I mean, they are in that it's how you behave, but it's like, are you showing up for them or are you showing up for like what they can do for you?
Yeah. And can you balance that with showing up for yourself? Because we're all human and this is not about having a lack of confidence, because that's not the same as humility either, but being confident in what you do know and knowing what you don't know, or being confident in where your strengths lie, but also knowing where your weaknesses are. Like it's the balance of the two that I think is really important and really hard to pinpoint. And so I love being able to take a look at like a list of six questions and being like that's what that means. That's what that looks like. And it's not just, do I think I do this? Because it's so easy for us to think, yeah, I totally do this. Like I totally offer and accept apologies, you know, graciously. But would other people say that about me? Like that's a very different reframe for it. So I really love the perspective of that kind of self-evaluation part of this. Next up is hungry. Hungry is having a high work ethic and striving for excellence. It is not being a workaholic or a martyr or trying too hard for approval. I think one of the things that we tend to see with humble is also martyrdom. And it can be confused with either humble or hungry. And it's someone who will like work all the hours and do all the things and, you know, be like work themselves into the ground for the sake of the company. And it feels very humble. It feels very hungry. It's like, well, this is what I want. You know, this is how I want to show my worth. But again, that makes it all about you. And it makes it so easy to conflate what is good and right with something that makes you look really good. Even if the good that you're trying to look is humble or hungry. Like those are traditionally really valuable traits to have in a team member. But if you're constantly falling on your sword in order for you to be hungry, one, how long are you going to last doing that? And two, will that really result in the end goal that you're trying to accomplish? Will it really be seen as promotable, or will it make you essential in the role that you currently have? You know, like if you're not able to kind of take yourself out of that space and see the bigger picture or zoom out and, you know, see more of the context, you just, you know, head down, power through constantly because that's how you get your worth. It's probably not going to take you to where you want to grow, which is like promotion or, you know, like it's really easy to get stuck in that kind of hamster wheel. And I think, yeah, being able to see the bigger picture is a big part of hungry too. So some of the things that they ask for under that hungry category are, I do more than what is required in my own job. I feel a sense of personal responsibility for the overall success of the team, not just my success, but the overall success of the team. I'm willing to contribute to and think about work outside of office hours. That one's a little controversial for us. Yeah. I think that one really only applies if you are a salaried employee and in leadership. So for us, most of our team is hourly. You can't do work off the clock. So if you're gonna contribute to and think about work outside of office hours, let's talk about how you can have better boundaries around work time and personal time and how you can transition from those two.
I mean, but maybe that one is maybe in our world, how this would function is less like I'm going to do, because we don't want you to do or think about work outside of office hours, and more like I do personal development outside of work. You know, I am learning and growing and doing other things that end up benefiting the company in my personal time, because we have a lot of team members that will do, you know, way more than the training that, you know, we have a budget for training time, and they just like training. They just like to learn things. So they'll go do more, and they'll still come share what they've learned outside of that, you know, budgeted time that we give. So maybe it's less like I'm going to do a crew work when I'm not clocked in, because HR will have thoughts about that. More like I just personally want to learn and grow. And then, you know, I can come share that with the team.
Yeah.
But I think also I really like that idea of that personal responsibility for the success of the team, because everyone on our team has very high personal responsibility.
Yes.
And that one is hard to balance with not taking on more responsibility than is appropriately yours. But then am I seeing in the way that I contribute what the end goal that we're all aiming at is? Or am I only worried about, well, I did my part. So like whether we got, whether we got to the goal or not, like it doesn't matter to me. Like I did my part, so you can't be mad at me. You know, I think this is more of that, like, well, what are we all aiming at? What are we all trying to accomplish? And is my contribution helping us get there? And do I actually care whether we get there? Because that will impact how I contribute. If I actually care whether we arrive at the destination, I will contribute differently than if I'm like, well, did my part. Sucks to suck.
Yeah. Another tool that the Table Group and Patrick Lencioni have built is the Working Genius, which we've referenced before. And one of those geniuses is Wonder. And I actually think that's one of the best ones for this, because under Hungry, because Wonder tends to come across as, hey, I wonder if we could do this better, or I wonder if, you know, there's a different way we could do this, or I wonder if we should be doing this. And it tends to come across as negative to people, because they're like, but this is how we're doing it, so can you stop trying to improve it? And it's what I love about the Working Genius, and about, you know, basically everything that the Table Group puts out at this point. What I love about it is that it reframes that as helpful. Even if I'm not the one who's going to be responsible for making that better, that Wonder is inherently valuable in asking the question, because it says, I care enough to be vulnerable and say, hey, is this an area for improvement for us in a way that makes us aim in the right direction? And maybe that requires a pivot in our priorities. And maybe it's not a pivot in my priority, but maybe it's a pivot for the entire company that needs to happen. And it's not really going to be on my plate, but that vulnerability and openness to that Wonder and poking holes in things, or being able to, you know, point at the gaps in things, is inherently valuable to making sure that we're all rowing in the same direction. And there's something really exciting about that, because I think it tends to make people feel crummy, and then they stop doing it. And then you start getting into that territory of, well, I did my part. Like if we didn't arrive there, like at least I did my part and I can feel good about that. But if we are on a team, and if most of what we do is teamwork, then the goal isn't that you feel good about what you did. That is a goal, and you should. You should feel good about your contribution, but you should feel good about your contribution to the whole.
Mm-hmm. Well, and so much of the improvement that we've made is because someone came in with a fresh set of eyes and went, why do we do it this way? And we're like, that is a great question. And if we don't have an answer, we should. And if the answer is we don't really know why we do it that way, we should strongly consider whether it is something we ought to do, whether we ought to do it in that way, whether there is a better way of doing it. And so I do think part of being hungry is asking those kinds of questions, because there's that care of wanting to do it well. Those wonder questions are directly connected to that striving for excellence. Yes. Because if you didn't care about it being good, you wouldn't ask if we could do it better. So, totally. You know, that being rewarded and that being encouraged and that, you know, not that we're necessarily always going to change everything because someone asked why we did it that way, but us continuing to encourage that kind of question is reinforcing that we want people here to be hungry. We want you to be thinking about how we can do this better. We want to have a really high standard, because that gives everyone something to strive for, and that makes the work so much more meaningful. I mean, how fulfilled are you going to be doing work where everyone's like, meh, good enough, whatever, you know, versus like, but could we do this better? And would we all actually like to care about that? That is so much more inspiring. You will get people who are much more hungry if that's what you're aiming at. So I really like the idea of wonder being connected with being hungry. I hadn't really thought about that before, but I think that's right.
Yeah. And it adds value to a company in a way that I think is really unique. And it's hard to create an environment where that wonder is valued. Like, I don't get me wrong. It's a challenge, because if I built it and someone's wondering about how we could do it better or wondering if we should be doing it, it's like, oh, but I made that. Oh no, I thought I did a good job. So like, you have to have humility in that. And like, you have to be willing to not always be the hero, not always be the right one, and to like build something and then have it be, you know, disassembled to some extent to be built better the next time someone sees a gap. You know, it's a challenging thing to do. Like, both of those are really challenging to have as a combination. But I will say, I think the third one is the most challenging, to find the right balance.
Yeah, it's hard to be smart.
No, it's very easy to be intellectually smart, but this is not about intellectual intelligence. This is so much more about that emotional intelligence, about the awareness of other people, about the ability to kind of hit the right balance of being, you know, strategic and smart in the ways that we typically think of as smart, but also care about the humans as much or more than the strategy, than the, you know, end goal, than all of that stuff. So, you know, being able to understand the way that other people are responding to you is really important in this. Being able to show empathy to other people, because not everyone is like you. And so being able to kind of take yourself out of your own perspective and see things from someone else's vantage point, or being able to understand what someone is going through and have a conversation about expectations, knowing that there's nuance happening in their life, or, you know, like things that the world and the lives that we live are complex. And so being able to take a human approach to your smart business savvy is a really challenging thing for most people to do, because they feel like you either care about people or you're really strategic. You're either really smart or you're really compassionate, and they are not mutually exclusive, but you got to find the right balance. And that's really hard.
It is definitely hard. And I think we all tend to lean one way or the other. I think this connects really closely to me with radical candor. It's very easy to lean towards more ruinous empathy, towards more of that compassion side, and just be so caring about other people that is actually not that helpful for them. You know, the kind of anything you made is better than the nothing we had before, which is not hungry. That's not going to encourage people to strive for excellence. So it's not actually that smart, you know, but it feels good. You know, it feels good in the moment. Or the other side, where, you know, you can have that almost like manipulative insincerity, almost that like, we're so strategic, we're so smart, like, we'll care about people in our off time, you know, but we're a business.
Yeah, or we'll care about people in a way that makes us look the way we want to look to other people because that's strategic. Not because right. I actually care, but because it's strategic for us too. And it's like, ooh, that's not quite right.
Right. You know, that kind of smart and hungry, but not humble. So you know what to say to make it look like you care about other people, but you don't actually need to bother with the caring part.
The actual caring.
And so this balance, you know, between caring personally and needing to be strategic and have finding ways where you can do both, where you can make the hard calls when it's needed, when you can challenge directly and make strategic choices while still also caring about the human beings that you work with. I think finding that balance and finding people who actually want to figure that out. You know, mm-hmm. I've been so impressed with so many of our team members who will notice things or pick up on things and then have ways of wanting to address it and looking for input on how they address it well, because they actually care about the other humans that they're either working with or their clients. And so it's like, yeah, like you get it. Like you get what we're doing here. So smart. I think that is the hardest one. I think humble is the most important, because if you don't have humility, you can be hungry and you can be smart, and you will, in their model, I think that is called a skillful politician. Mm-hmm. They talked about how, you know, they look great until at some point you start to see all the dead bodies that are hid in various places, you know, as this skillful politician was making their way through the organization. Oh, that's weird. Your team has been cut in half, but you now make 3 times as much. Like, huh? You know, like that kind of thing. So I think humble is the most important one, but I think smart is definitely the hardest one to build that skill set.
Yeah. If you're listening and you're curious about kind of some of these kind of matrices, so to speak, of like the crossover. If you're humble and hungry, you know, you're this. If you're smart and hungry, you're this. There's actually some really great graphics that exist. One of them, I think, is if you just Google ideal team player matrix, you'll find this. But if you're primarily in that humble space, you run the risk of becoming a pawn. If you're primarily in that hungry space, you are typically a bulldozer. That's up. If you live primarily in that smart space, you tend to be the charmer. So it's really easy for you to get your way in things, but like you don't actually have the humility or the hunger to kind of get to the right place or with the right people. But then when you have crossover, so humble and smart is the lovable slacker. So I can get away with not doing that much, but everybody likes me, so it's totally cool.
We have had some of those.
We have had some of those. The combination of humble and hungry is the accidental mess maker. So real. Mm-hmm. So real. And the combination of hungry and smart is that skillful politician. And right in the middle, if you can find a really excellent balance to all three of these elements, which does take work, and it's not innate to, I would argue, it's not innate to anyone, but it takes work to get there. And that really is that perfect ideal team player. And that doesn't mean that you are perfect or that you do these perfectly all the time, but it means that you have an awareness of all of these. You know where you tend to go. You're working on the area that you need to kind of go toward. So if you are that, you know, skillful politician where you're hungry and smart, you need to aim toward more humility. How can you integrate that in the way that you work on a team? Like that kind of awareness and striving toward excellence will get you much closer to an ideal team player that I think is really worth talking about with people. This is also super helpful from a management perspective and just being able to articulate to someone like, these are your growth areas. This is where I see you needing to continue developing. You are great at these things. Here's the area that we can still continue to see you developing. And it's a really good big picture starting place for someone who has some of that character development to be done, because that's really what this comes down to, is character. And I think that's a good foundational understanding of this tool, because this kind of humility, this kind of hunger that we're talking about, and this kind of smart that we're talking about aren't really about, like, you know, striving for that promotion. They aren't really about, like, grinding yourself into the ground for that, you know, to get the work done. They aren't really about, like, being the smartest person in the room. It's about being someone that other people want to work with, someone that you would want to work with, and someone that you feel proud to show up as every day, you know, because that's a different approach to work. If you're not focused entirely on yourself, you get to show up in a way that you're proud of, that other people enjoy being around, and that makes you feel like you're actually filling a need at a company and can model the kind of person that you would want to see in the rest of your team.
Well, and I think this is a good framework for a thing we kind of already know. You sort of know who on your team you love having on your team, but sometimes it's hard to articulate why. Like, what is it about them that makes them so great to work with? Because it's hard to specifically identify at times when someone's almost someone you love working with, but like not quite, you know? So it's hard to figure out how to coach them specifically, or like if you don't have a clear way of explaining what it would look like to be an ideal team player, then it's really hard to coach and guide people that are so close to being an ideal team player, but they have some growth areas, you know? And so then we tend to focus on things like work. Like, well, you could do your work a little bit sooner, or you could do it, you know, a little more thoroughly, or like, hey, you know, you like, we tend to focus on things that are like symptoms of the problem, yes, you know, rather than actually getting down into like, well, hey, you're really knowledgeable and you have a lot of technical skills and that's great, but every time I try to give you feedback, it feels like an argument and like I need you to be a little more coachable. You know, that's harder to like pinpoint if you are actually looking at some kind of a framework of like, what would it look like to be the ideal team player to work with?
Yeah.
So one of the things I think would be cool is like, without any names, is some stories of team members, or it could be outside of work, that, you know, what does it actually mean to live out these three things, like to be humble or to be hungry or to be smart? Like, what have you seen? Well, we could just start with humble. Like, what have you seen where you're like, yeah, that's what it means to be humble?
Yeah. The primary thing that I see at, you know, our company and the way that we work is I'm looking for people who are looking for feedback. We're looking for input because they know that they don't know everything. And this is particularly important, I think, if you are in a role that requires a lot of feedback, which the way that we do things, everyone gets feedback. When you start, you get a lot of feedback. And that's, you know, that's something that we've had to build into our hiring process just so that people are not surprised by the time they get in. It's a different vibe. Like, it's a different kind of thing than most companies. And one of the primary things that we hear from candidates is, I just never get feedback, or I only get feedback once a year. And that is really challenging for me because I just wish I knew how I was doing. And so I think that's easy to feel like it's happening to you. And most people come in and just like hope that we weren't lying about giving a lot of feedback. But what I really find impressive is when someone is seeking it out. So I've had a few team members who have, in the last like several months, have come to me and said, hey, I just want to know how I'm doing in this process. Like, I want to know where I stand and whether I'm still going in the right direction. So can we meet, and can I get some feedback from you about it? And, you know, part of that conversation is I want you to self-assess too. But at the end of the day, like, we all kind of want to know, like, but what do you think? I can think all I want about how I'm doing, but like, I'm crushing it, right? Like, it's not right. That helpful.
Are you asking for feedback? Or are you asking for praise? You know, yes. The team members that are genuinely asking for feedback, you can tell.
Yes. And I think a lot of times it's easy when you get a lot of feedback to slip into old habits of being like, oh no, all I can see is the feedback. All I can see are the growth areas. I can't actually see what I'm bringing to the table. And so I've been really impressed with a couple of our team members who have asked for that feedback, who have kind of been like, oh, it's a lot. Like, that's a lot of stuff I need to work on and keep doing. But when I challenge them with, yeah, but like, you kind of forgot about all the good things I said. Mm-hmm. you kind of forgot about like all the things that you've already done to grow and improve. And so I'm always really impressed with someone who is not just looking for that feedback, but who's also able to start or end or kind of balance that with, I can see how I've already grown. You know, I can mm-hmm. see the ways that I've already been improving in this. Like, this is, you know, my communication has improved so much in these ways. And I know I still need to work on this, but I'm aware of it. Like that, I'm mm-hmm. just like, oh, I love hearing that. It's so good. I actually had one of those conversations today. You know, someone joined just a little over a year ago. And she was telling me that, like, she's keenly aware of how vague her natural tendencies in communication are and how precise we tend to be with our words, and how that's been like a growth area for her since she started, that she's like, oh, that's different from me. Mm-hmm. And some of it's personality, some of it's not going to just change. But I think when you work in a remote environment like we do, and you have so little time, you can't catch miscues as easily. You can't, you know, see someone misinterpret what you said, you know, last week and go, oh, sorry, I wasn't clear. Let me clarify. You may never see that because you guys work in isolation primarily, and you only really interact face to face on Zoom. And so you're not getting that proximal, like, context clues back about what wasn't clear. And so you can't really course correct or pivot very easily. And so in a remote environment, that precision of language is super important. And so she was able to talk about, like, these are the ways that I've already grown in that. I'm super aware of it. I'm not quite where I want to be, but I already am getting better because I can see when I didn't do it, or I can see when I inadvertently, you know, gave a lot of like thanks and praise to someone for doing something and accidentally made it seem like they were doing me a favor. Okay, I need to be conscientious of how I'm framing this, because yes, it's cool that they did that and I'm grateful and I want to praise that and like highlight that. And I can't make it seem like someone is doing me a favor because this is work and they agreed to do that thing. So like, right. There's just a really, really cool awareness that I think is really helpful in that humility sector. And it's a balance between these are my strengths and this is where I still need to grow.
Well, and one that made me think of that I hadn't thought about before was people who ask clarifying questions. I think that is humility. Because you're saying, I'm not going to assume I 100% understand. I'm willing to be vulnerable. I'm willing to potentially admit that I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And I'm willing to ask what might even be a dumb question, because I want to make sure at the end of it, I have clarity and I know what I need to do from here, or I understand the directive I'm getting, or I understand the feedback, and so I could like go do something with it. So I think people who ask clarifying questions, it's so relieving. And it feels so uncomfortable to do until it becomes a habit. And then you mm-hmm. kind of don't think about it. You just mm-hmm. do it. Like, well, yeah, I'm just going to ask the clarifying question, because like, why would I want to go do a bunch of work that wasn't what you meant? And actually, there was quite a bit of that this last week. I was out of the office and doing some like volunteering, and there was some very broad strokes instruction on ideas of things that was not super clear. And so I would ask clarifying questions. I also asked what the rules were. I asked what the rules were of whether we were allowed to drink several times in several situations. I was on a mission trip. And so, you know, we had signed something that's saying like, hey, we're on this mission trip. Like, we're not going to drink while we're here, which I'm cool. I agree to. But then I'm like, okay, so we're like, you know, at the lunch before we get on the plane, and we're not still at the place we were serving. Like, this is still part of the trip though, right? This is still the no drinking. Cool. I just want to know what the rules are so I can follow them. Like, I don't have a problem with this. Like, I just want to know. And the person who was running it was just like, I love that you're asking. You know, it just is that like, I would much rather have you ask and tell you, and then we don't run into any issues, then have you not ask and then you go do it, and then I gotta have the awkward conversation. Like, it's just so much better to work with, because it avoids having to have the awkward conversation later of like, that's not what I meant at all, and now you've spent time or effort or work or whatever. And so just clarifying questions, it's just, yeah, It's the best.
I love it. It's so great. Yeah. How about hungry? Or do you have any examples of humble?
Well, this is going to seem weirdly not humble because it's about me, but
I'm so good at being humble.
I'm kind of the best at being humble. No, I'll be speaking later this year, and I needed to do a meeting to run through my slide deck for it. And I not humbly was like, I mean, I got this, you know, like it's going to be great. And mostly because one of our team members made it and she makes awesome stuff, but you know, just definitely some lack of humility there on my part. And I was kind of expecting that it would just be perfunctory. This is just a box we need to check. Cause like, I got this, and I got quite a bit of feedback, which was great. And I could tell that this person gives feedback to a lot of accountants, because it was very like, do I have your permission to give literally any amount of feedback? If you want, it's okay. If not, that's okay. You don't have to take it. And so it was just like, yeah, no, I want the feedback. And then as she was giving ideas and feedback, I was like, oh, that's great. Oh yeah. Like I could totally see that. Yeah. I'm going to make a note here. And then that just encouraged her to keep going, because she was getting the response from me that like, no, when I said I want the feedback, like I actually do want it. And I actually do want this to be great. And like, it, like, even though I think it's really good, I don't need to fall on my sword about this. Like it still could be better. And you're right. Like, I'm not going to just tell you it's great. Like your idea is great and then not do it. Like I'm going to respond genuinely, you know, but like, I'm also going to respond encouraging that I do actually want to know what you think. And now I've got a bunch of updates to make of even just really simple things like, hey, you've got this quote on the slide and then a picture that has nothing to do with a quote on the slide. Like it seems like a real missed opportunity. Like the picture could actually give the vibe of the quote so that these feel connected. And it's not just like a generic, you know, office people doing office things picture. And it was like, oh, that's great. Like it's, yeah, you know, a idea about being a person, like we could actually demonstrate that in some way in a visual form and then have that connect, you know, it's, so it was just this, well, A, I was expecting to get nothing out of it. So I'm actually not that humble. And then I did get stuff out of it because I can actually shift gears into being humble when I need to be, except when I'm not. And as I get input that is actually helpful, go, yeah, that's awesome. Thank you. Like, and I think that's another one for team members, the ones who thank us for the advice or feedback or input. I don't need that. Like, I'm not looking for that. But when that happens, there's, I think it's more an indication of how they're receiving it than it is like that I need them to be grateful for it. You know, it's like, I don't need you to be grateful, but you might be really helped by you being grateful for that input, because you will take it, receive it, and do something with it in a different way if you have gratitude for it than if you have resentment for it, or if you're just doing it because you have to, like I started that meeting. But I was really glad I went, and I got a lot of really helpful input. So inadvertently humble later.
But you are the best at it. So
I mean, I'm pretty great at it. So stupid.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. How about hungry? Any examples that come to mind for hungry?
Yeah, I think that same idea, so connected to feedback, but really in terms of aiming for excellence. So team members who aren't just like looking for feedback and really looking for praise, and also aren't just looking for feedback in what's wrong with their work. I think that's an easy one to kind of conflate with, like, that's helpful. That's a good starting place. You want to know if there are errors so that you can fix them. But I feel like that next level and really going from humble to hungry is like, I want to know how I can make my work awesome. Like I want your input on how I can do it better, not just how it could not be wrong, you know, but how it could be better than it is now. And so I think that's definitely tied into being hungry. I think also when we've had team members that let us know that they can help with other things. And I think our felt capacity has been huge with that of a yes. formal way of indicating, you know, regardless of the literal time I am assigned work in hours, here's what I have capacity for to help. You know, maybe I don't have capacity to take on more recurring client work, but I'd be super down to do, you know, some one-off projects or to help with other kinds of things. I think that kind of hunger is really cool to see team members like, oh yeah, I'm happy to pitch in. I'm happy to, you know, cover if someone is out sick, or I'm happy to fill in for someone that is on vacation, because I know that like someone will fill in for me like when I'm on vacation, and I would really like that, you know, but not in that sort of one for one way, but just people who are open to take on more, open to take on work that's even kind of outside of their role because it's needed, you know, again, not as martyrs. You know, you're not offering something you don't want to do. You're not offering something that's going to, you know, blow past your availability, but that you've managed yourself and your time such that you can have some room, and not just that you have room, that you're open and offering that room to us, you know, because we don't have a set number of hours for our hourly team members. Like, you don't have to work this many number of hours every single week, you know, that there's some flexibility in that. So if you have a range of hours you're available and you only work some of that range, we don't expect you to offer the rest of it to us. Like, there's no like, well, but you said this was your max, so that's what we expect every week. But the people that are open to offering some of that when they have it, like, that is really cool to see.
Yeah. I think when people bring something that they got outside of working with us as well, like, you can, you know, you get a lot of training and development when you work at a crew, but if you're bringing skills that you are, you know, that you had before you worked here, or that you're gaining outside of working here, I think that's also a really good indicator of hunger. So I can think of one team member in particular who has a background in, she did a little bit of work with like Rotary clubs, and she also has had some experience with like property management and some things like that. And so she's got some real estate experience, but bringing that in and being able to like leverage that while feeling like confident that you can, you know, bring that in, bring some expertise, but also there's more to learn. And, you know, she's still growing in some of those areas too, and gaining some new knowledge and experience from working here. But she brought that knowledge set in a way that I think really represents that hunger well, because, you know, even if you have a background in a completely different industry, if you're able to take that and say, this is how this is actually advantageous to this company, this aligns with the mission of what we're trying to accomplish, this, you know, this totally falls into the goals of what we're trying to do, then like, it's pretty great. Like, another team member has some really cool experience with like marketing and nonprofits, and some app experience and some development, like really broad stuff from like really different areas that somehow merged together in her life and have been so helpful and useful to us, because she's just got this like really cool excitement around the idea of leveraging AI and trying to get that to work for our marketing efforts, or, you know, trying to make that functional for how we build some new training or process or something. And so it's really fun to see people bringing in their passions from outside, because that to me says a lot about your hunger. And I think that falls under the category of, I have a passion for the mission of the team. Like, if you get what we're doing, what we're trying to accomplish, and you can see beyond just like, well, I want to feel smart and important. You can see like, well, actually, I have some experience in this, and I think it could be really helpful. Let me just see if they think it would be helpful. Like, I love when someone is coming at it from a collaborative standpoint, because they get what we're doing and they're aligned with what we're doing. It makes such a difference for us saying like, that's awesome, that might be a later thing, or that's awesome, let's do that now, or that's awesome, we should have done that 3 months ago.
Like, yeah, where have you been?
Yeah, seriously. So I think that's a really good indicator of hunger for us too.
Well, I think to that point, this isn't something I had thought about before either, which is why I love having conversations about stuff. Well, I've thought about it before, but not in this particular context. Several of our team members, including you and I, have different experiences in the world of like behavioral therapy.
Yeah.
And so many of our conversations like go in this direction of, well, if we do this, are we rewarding the behavior that we don't want to see, or are we incentivizing the kind of behavior we do want to see? And so obviously we're not necessarily doing cognitive behavioral therapy on our clients. We are not therapist accountants, you know, but just having that frame of reference of if this, then that. You know, yeah. This is basic human motivation. You know, we want to reward the kinds of behaviors we want to see more of. We want to disincentivize the kind of behaviors we don't want to see. So is how we're behaving in response to this particular, you know, trigger going to result in rewarding or not rewarding, you know, in encouraging more of this or discouraging more of this? And when it's someone's doing something good, we want to say, yeah, that's awesome. More of that, please. And when someone's doing something that we would really prefer not happen, you know, we don't want to then do, yeah, more of that, please, or we're going to get more of that. You know, yeah. So all of us having that, not all of us, but those of us that do, having that behavioral therapy background, which has nothing to do with accounting. Like, no. It's not a requirement for this job, but just gives so many shortcuts. Like, we're all kind of on the same page of understanding what we're talking about, that we can shortcut a lot of conversations or guidance for team members, because we're like, yeah, I mean, you get it, you know? So I do love the idea of people who are hungry are bringing, they're bringing everything that they can contribute to the table. They're bringing their experience, they're bringing their interests, they're bringing their passions, they're bringing, you know, different kinds of things than what we already had. They are showing up as cultural contributors and not just cultural benefiters.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think all of this kind of falls into SMART as well. So that ability to kind of read the room, that's always really helpful for this, because you can tell if it's safe to say, hey, I have this background that I think could be really helpful here. Or you can tell if, you know, people want your contribution or not, or if it's a place that it will be received well or not. And so being able to kind of identify and articulate what you can bring to the table requires some amount of that, like, emotional awareness and nuance of not just yourself, but also of the place that you're kind of offering that to as well. I think for SMART, a lot of it is the ability to think outside of your own perspective. Like, so I can think of a few team members who that doesn't come naturally to them at all. Like, it's definitely not something that they've had to practice a lot of before coming here. But in just asking the question in a kind way from, you know, our perspective and saying, okay, so this is actually how that would land or could land for that person. Is that how you want this to land with them? Being able to kind of do that in a kind way and put our arm around someone, so to speak. We're virtual, so never doing that. So HR, don't get
virtual arm.
Yeah, a proverbial arm around them and saying, like, is this how you want to show up? And like, have you thought about it from this perspective? Has been really helpful in getting those team members that don't tend to think in terms of that empathy perspective to really expand that skill set. And I've seen it, you know, we've got one team member in particular who's developing into a new role, and they have really been able to, like, encourage and get excited about the people that they're developing and still guide. Like, even though they're new in the role and they're kind of feeling into it and learning it, they still are able to balance that learning mode and that humility with the ability to say, yeah, but I do know some things. And I do, like, here's where I can challenge or push back. And it won't be in everything. Like, I'm still growing into this, but I know where I can push and where I'm still kind of like, hey, can I get some input from someone else before I do this? So I think that SMART is, again, it's so challenging to find the right balance. And it's a very individual balance, I think, because you're bringing in such unique skills to that. Some people are really good at the strategy. Like, I love strategy and I love, like, figuring things out. And I think that's one of the reasons why in my behavioral health background, like, I was really good at what I did. Cause I was like, how can I make this work? Like, how can I get this person to adapt to the things that I want them to and grow these skills in this way, which is cool in theory, but also the person has to want it. Mm-hmm. And they have to, you know, it has to be for them, not just for me. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot that I've had to like stretch and grow in the other direction of, if someone doesn't want it, I can't want it more than they do. And so I've had to develop a lot of resilience to not just like inserting myself and being like, yeah, but we all care about this, right? Let me show you how much we care about it. And we're going to go in this direction, right? Everybody.
Yeah.
And instead to say, what do you care about? Because if you don't care about this, like we need to have a different conversation, but I need this to be the place that we end. How can we get there together as opposed to how can I get us there? And that mm-hmm. is a really challenging growth area for me, but I think it's been really formative and really helpful in not just my professional life, but in my personal life too.
Well, and I think this is an area that you are so good at. Like I'm thinking back to all the conversations that we've had, particularly challenging conversations where both of us are, you know, maybe on a call with like a team member that we're coaching and I'm fumbling through it and you're private chatting me like, don't say that. Like, you know, usually it's something much more positive than that, you know, but you're
like, maybe you might want to add this so that it's not just that.
Yeah. Don't forget this too, maybe because what you said makes it seem like a different thing than like what we're here to do. that sounds much snarkier than you actually are. No, but like particularly it's hard to do the hard to be smart and be on at the same time. You know, It's hard to be the one that is coaching and to be picking up what the other person is, you know, non-verbally putting down at the same time because you're, you know, kind of thinking about what you need to say and what you need to get across. And so there have been so many times where it's super helpful to have you there just reading the room and kind of nudging me one way or the other. And then we land somewhere that's way better than I would have guided us to solo because I have that kind of radar, that kind of, you know, just feeling out the weather that's happening in the room and then just some like, hey, like a little more to the right, like a little more to the left, like we're gonna get there. Like you're gonna get us there, but like a little more that way.
Yeah.
So I think that this is an area I think I had to do a lot more work on. But I think you came in with a lot more intuiting the room. And it's one I had to pay more attention to and work on more because I just wanted to like woo the room. I just want to galvanize the room to the fun thing, you know, or like, you know, it's getting too serious. Let me pull up with a joke. And it's like, yeah, maybe we don't do that right now. Maybe not when we're
terminating someone.
Yeah, this is no joke Tuesday actually during that termination meeting, you know, so maybe not that. So, and I think some of before was that, especially when you're having hard conversations, to genuinely be humble and then be able to be smart means you can't be focused on how you feel about it. Yeah. You have to actually be showing up for that other person. And sometimes you're going to have to say or do things that would make you uncomfortable. But if you're focused on how you feel, you're not going to be showing up for that other person, you know, and in a less like deep way, even just some of the simple things we do, like equipping the team to like write in reverse, think about the recipient of this message. Like, will they receive tone in it that you didn't intend? You know, will this be clear enough to them that they understand you're asking them to do something, you know, or are you kind of dancing around asking them to do something because you don't want to feel like their boss, but then you're actually not being clear that you need them to do something. So that one.
That's me. That can be me.
Well, I think that can be all of us, particularly in client relationships, because we talk about a lot, you know, like we're not their boss, we're not their mom, like, but sometimes we need them to do something. And if we kind of are vague about it, if we're like, it would be so nice if you could, don't want to bother you, you know, they're not going to get that you're like, hey, can you send me this? You know, you could say, hey, can you send me this week? Or can you send me this when you have a sec, you know, but like, can you send me this? That's the ask. So yeah.
And I think next level smart is being able to say, can you send me this? Because this is how it'll affect you. I need mm-hmm. you to care about sending this, because otherwise you won't send it because, well, if it's not clear, you won't send it because you didn't know what I was asking
right.
for. But then that next level is, even if I'm clear, if you don't care, then there's no incentive for you to actually do that. So how can I help you understand why you should care so that we can work on this together? Because I can ask and I can make it clear, but if there's no real motivation for you to do anything, then we're going to end up at the same place. And I might end up resenting you for not just doing my thing. And yeah. I would just really rather not resent you. You
know? No thanks to that. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a really dumb example, but one I sent yesterday was, hey, can you look at these reports of what sales tax you owe from last quarter and make sure it looks right? And then we will make sure your return is filed and the payment is made by the due date. That's why I want you to do this thing, so that we can do our part to make sure you stay in compliance. But if I just said, hey, can you look at this report when you have a sec? Okay, like this week, this month, does it even matter? You know, but like, so that we can do this thing we need to do by this date we need to do it by, is a lot clearer about why you would care about this and how it impacts you and when we need you to let us know by. There's so, and none of that is like, you've got to do this. You know, it's just like, hey, can you do this? And then we'll do our part. And here's when it's due. And like, we all good. So yeah.
And we'll follow up
if we need to. I'm still going to own that it is my responsibility to get that from you, but it is also my responsibility to be clear to you so that you know what you need to do, why it matters, when I need it by, you know, all of those things. I think that is connected to being smart rather than just, well, I asked.
Yes. Yeah. It's such an accountant thing to be like, I asked you for it, so it's on you now. And it's like, yeah, but like,
that's dumb.
Together.
Yeah, like, that's just dumb. It's not smart.
Well, and it doesn't really factor in humanity. Like, mm-hmm. it assumes that everyone else's focus is the same as your focus. And that's just not real. Like, we work with business owners and leaders who are unbelievably busy. That doesn't mean we're not busy. Sure. We are. But when
we're not paying them, they're paying us. So exactly. It's our responsibility to serve them well, and we should own moving that forward.
Exactly. And we are not responsible for them. So if they never do, it's not our job to swoop in and save the day or fix it or like panic or start becoming or acting like their boss. You know, like none of that is the right response. It is our job to ask for things clearly in a way that makes sense, that helps them understand the why behind it, to follow up, and then to say, now it's on you. Like, right. I did my part, you didn't do yours, and that's okay. But here are the consequences. Here's what's going to happen as an end result of this. And I think that's one of the reasons why the clients that we work with like working with us, because we're thinking about things from that human perspective. And that is the nuance, I think, that's really hard to strike for the smart. It's not just about getting people to do your thing your way. It's about getting people to work together toward the same end goal in a way that keeps you on the same side of the table, as opposed to in opposition to each other. Because if at the end of the day, we feel like we're enemies, then like, why are you even paying me?
We've had vendor relationships that felt like that. And it was just like, what are we doing right now? Because like, I thought we were paying you so that we could together achieve an outcome. And this feels like you're annoyed at me. Like, so I'm,
how
I'm,
does that work?
I'm paying for someone to be mad at me. Like, maybe you know what? I can have people be mad at me for free. I don't need to pay for that.
Well, and I think that goes back to like, that is something I have experienced as like a customer of accountants and as someone who works in a firm and is aware of like other firms. Like, I hear it so often from clients, and as a client, I've felt this of like, aren't we supposed to be working together? Like, mm-hmm. Are we not on the same page about what the end goal is? Because if the end goal is for you to just take my money and make me feel bad, I shouldn't keep giving you money. Like, that's just an insane.
Again, I can feel bad for free. So
yeah.
I don't want to do this one.
And it really is too easy to slip into that. And I think that's one of the things in this industry that I really would love to see shift is just this mentality that like, we're actually for our clients. We're not, mm-hmm. we're not against them. We're for them. And we show up in ways that make them feel that, not just say it. Like, we're not just saying like our clients are the heroes. We're like actually living it out in a way that makes them feel like that's true. Because it doesn't just matter that we say it, it matters that we do it.
Yes. Well, I mean, people will believe what you do. You know, yeah. they'll hear what you say, but they'll believe what you actually do. Stay tuned for our next episode where we continue the conversation on how to be an ideal team player. It's going to be good.